Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Millennial Love, a podcast from The Independent focusing on everything to do with sexuality, relationships, identity and more. We touch on a wide variety of topics ranging from how to have feminist sex to how dating has changed in the post-Me Too era. I'm your host Olivia Petter and today on the programme I'm joined by a comedian and host of the Griefcast podcast, Cariad Lloyd, and we're going to discuss grief. Cariad, would you like to start by just explaining a bit about Griefcast?
Yeah. And people are always like, you do what?
And I'm like, it's a podcast about death. So I interview comedians and, yeah, as you said, expanded to other people. That's not loads of comedians, guys. So I interview comedians mainly about their experiences of grief and death. So it can be anything from talking about their experiences of losing a parent, to losing a sibling, to losing a grandparent, to losing a friend. And even we have an episode about a dog as well. So it's just exploring all forms of grief and loss. And the reason I do this, because again, then people are like, she's weird, is my dad died when I was 15. So I've been having this conversation for a long time. And so I just thought it would be a good opportunity to talk to other people about it in a uplifting, hopefully not too depressing way.
And do you get quite a lot of messages from listeners?
Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry, that sounded really like yes. I was meant to be like yes. Yes is the answer. I get a lot of messages, which I don't mind at all. It's just the reason I'm being awkward is I feel so guilty because I haven't replied to them all yet. So there's like about 300 waiting for replies. If you're listening, that's you. I am so sorry. I'm getting there. I have a folder called like reply once a day. Try and do one a day. Anyway, I'm really gabbling. I get emails, I get Twitter DMs, I get Instagram messages, I get messages on Facebook, because what I realised when I started the podcast is that I talked about it quite freely, but so many people don't. So many people write to me saying like, I've never told anyone, my close friends, what happened to me, or I haven't told my wife how my dad died when I was 3 because my family decided not to talk about it. And that opening of the door when they realise there's a community of people that are willing to talk about it is really huge. And we have a really big Twitter conversation going all the time. So we're at the Griefcast, and basically what happens is someone will tweet and be like, it's my dad's anniversary tomorrow, first time doing this, what the hell do I do? Then I retweet with some advice, and then literally, yeah, a lot of griefsters, as we call ourselves, get involved and help and support. And people will message, be like, I live near you, DM me, I'm here all day if you need me. So yeah, it's actually quite a large community I've discovered.
So it might come as no surprise to people listening that today we are going to talk about grief.
In case you hadn't, my specialist subject.
In case you hadn't realised. But specifically how it manifests in relationships. So maybe you're someone who has tragically lost a partner, or you are with a partner who is grieving someone, maybe a family member or a friend. However it is in your life, you know, grief is something that, as we've said, is incredibly complex, and I think it's something that we actually get wrong a lot of the time, and you know, from a society perspective, we just misunderstand it, because I think there's quite a lot of shame around grief, and it's almost like it's a bit of a taboo to speak about it.
It's probably a global thing, but it's a particularly British thing, I think, of fear of emotional reactions. And also we have a really tricky thing. Look at Brexit, guys. We have a fear of being wrong. And what I think is really funny is people are like, oh, my friend has lost their dad. If I say something, one, they might get upset, or two, it might be the wrong thing to say, therefore I'm not going to say anything, which to me is like, makes me want to scream, because it's like, so one, they might get upset, yes, their parent has died, of course they will get upset, like it would be strange if they didn't. What you have to do is separate your I'm getting a bit feisty here separate your own ego from their emotional reaction. So you have nothing to do with their upset. What's upset them is their dad has died, so you are not going to make it worse it's already pretty bad. Like, so don't feel like you have the power to make it good or bad. You don't. All you can do is say, I'm here and I love you, which at that time might not stop them feeling sad, but maybe 6 months later they will think, oh God, that really meant something. That really helped me. That really made me realize I wasn't alone. And also in terms of saying something wrong, it's like, so fucking what? Like, so you can see I'm getting so angry. Like, so what? So you say something and the other person's like, oh, well, that's a bit, you know, that's made me feel this or this. You know what you do? You go, oh, I'm really sorry. Mm. I'm really sorry. I've never lost anyone, so I don't know what to say. But I just want you to know I'm just trying to help you and I'm bound to get it wrong. But like, I just want you to know I'm here. I think people are so afraid of being wrong or emotion that they would rather, like you said, stay away.
Yeah.
And the staying away, if it was not a harmless action, I'd be like, yeah, cool. You didn't know what to do. Don't worry about it. Go home. But the staying away is really harmful. And what you're doing is you're saying your pain is so unbearable, I can't bear it with you. And I think that's like, you wouldn't say that. If someone's bag was really heavy, you'd go, oh, mate, I'll carry it for you for 5 minutes and then I'll give it back. That is what you're offering to do when you turn up or just send a text message. Just send a WhatsApp being like, hey, just thinking of you.
Do you think a message like that is better than saying something like quite generic, like anything you need, I'm here for you?
Yeah, I mean,
because that's sort of like the automatic response, isn't it? But I think, you know, I read a piece by Perna Bell, who I know went on your podcast, about grief and the things we get wrong. And she said, you know, these generic statements, however well-intentioned they may be, they're not actually that helpful because you're sort of putting the ball in the person who's grieving, you're putting the ball in their court when that person has already got enough on their plate to deal with.
I would say if all you've got is generic, let's start there.
Yeah.
Like if literally you can only type, if there's anything you need, let me know. And that's like making you uncomfortable, send that. But if you can get past that, then yes, I think be aware that when you're saying to someone, if there's anything you need, it's like saying to someone with a broken leg that's bleeding everywhere, oh, let me know if you want a bandage or let me know if you want me to call the ambulance. Like they'd be like, what do you mean? Just do it. Like, what do you, look at me. So it's the same thing. If someone's grieving, they are in trauma, they are in pain, they're in sadness. Like just try and look at their life and think, what do they need? Do they need someone to bring food around? Do they need someone to literally come around and empty do all their bins all over their house? Do they need someone to just turn up with like some milk and some eggs and some bread so they don't have to think about breakfast for a few days? Like there's so many little things you can do that don't require a lot of energy. But so that's the thing. And we're not asking you to like, you know, saintly come over and like change someone's world. You don't have to change someone's world. But, you know, things like another thing I think is a really good tip. Put the anniversary in your phone. So if you know when your parent, like that person's parent or partner died, just put on a reminder on your calendar. So then in 6 months time or a year later, you're like, oh God, it's been a year since so-and-so's mum died. I'll just drop her a text the week before. Like stuff like that is golden to people who are grieving because you just can't believe people remembered. It means so much because the world doesn't remember and the world is moving so fast and it seems like no one else gives a crap about your pain. So yeah, you the generic things are helpful place to start, but if you can look at that phrase and then think, oh, is there actually something I could easily do? Like, you know, I know they've got to go and visit their mum next week and but dad's died. Like, could I give them a lift? Could I walk them to the station? Like, there's just really simple things.
If you are dating someone,
yes,
and say you've been with them for maybe a month or 2 months, not very long at all, and then suddenly they lose someone close to them, do you think as a partner of someone who is grieving you should try and push to support that person, or if they push you away you just accept it? What do you do in that situation? How can you help someone who you maybe don't know that well, but you're at the beginning of a blossoming, you know, relationship, and then something like this just sort of shits all over it.
Yeah, I've known that situation from other people, and it's funny. It either, what I've noticed, which is obviously just my layman's observations, either the relationship breaks up immediately or those people get married. Like it either like destroys you or strengthens you so much that you're like, this is it. We've been through this shit. We can get through anything. So I think don't be, obviously be upset, but like don't be surprised if it breaks up, because grief is one of the biggest experiences that we will all go through at some point, and it is life-changing. And similar to having a baby, if you've had friends that have babies and you're like, oh, they have really changed. It's the same thing when someone dies. Like, you know, the metaphor sometimes uses like the empty chair at the table. Like, everything has to reform. The whole family dynamic has to change. That person's understanding of what life is, who they are, their identity, everything is smashed to pieces. And when you are grieving, it does feel like you're sort of burnt to the ground and you have to rebuild yourself. And I think if you're at the start of a relationship, it can be very hard to go, oh, I can't really think about you because all I'm doing is like surviving each day. So I think grieving people can be quite selfish. And I mean that like not in a negative, judgmental way, just like they have to be because they are in survival mode. So I think that's why relationships break up, because they can't really see outside their own circle. And it might be they can only see themselves, or they can only see their immediate family. And if you're new and you haven't like wedged your way into into the unit yet, then yeah, you're, you know, last in, first out. I think it's really personal as well. Like, depends on the grief. If somebody's had an extremely traumatic sudden death, like, they're going to be in shock for about 6 months. So you might get delayed grief. You might be like, oh, you know, my boyfriend or girlfriend is exactly the same. And then suddenly 6 months later, they're like, it's over, I'm grieving. You're like, what? We've been fine. So be aware that it can take a while for a grief to kind of sink in. If it's deeply traumatic, if it's, you know, something that's been coming for a long time, they might be more prepared for it, or they might be more somber about it. Like, it's completely case by case basis. If somebody pushes you away, it's really difficult. I think, you know, I wouldn't want to advocate like, no, stay around, like, because that's stalking. If someone pushes away, you might have to accept, which is, I can completely understand, is really, really difficult, that they are just not in a position to be in relationship with you. And I hate to say it, but like, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. Like, grieving is not a permanent state. Like, they will be changed forever. But the initial sort of bomb drop of what grief does to you will calm down. So it may very well be that somebody, you know, changes their whole life. They move house, they break up, they change their job, they move abroad. And then a year later, they're like, oh, sorry. Okay, I've come back down to earth and I can reform my life. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's completely over. People can come back and go, oh, okay, I'm ready to form relationships again. But you are essentially dating a different person. Like, that isn't the person you were dating before the death. So I think that if that is helpful, to be like, you're not breaking up with the person who was there. That person, sadly, is also dead, because that person had a dad or a mum and they don't anymore.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Going back to losing a partner specifically, because I've seen this happen within my own family, and the disruption, you know, I'm sure it's the same for any other kind of dynamic, but the disruption, it lasts for years.
Yeah.
It really does, especially when it was, in my case, when it was very sudden. I don't know if you listened to Elizabeth Gilbert talking on Fern Cotton's podcast about this. She lost her partner, Rhea.
Yes, yeah. And she's amazing about grief.
God,
yeah.
She's brilliant. And she was talking about how one of the hardest things for her was just embracing the grief, as opposed to trying to swallow it and trying to pretend that it's not there and trying to fight it, because that just made it 10 times worse.
You have to just like lay back and let a huge, horrible, depressing wave hit you.
How do you do that? How do you just accept it? I mean, obviously that makes sense, but how do you just embrace it as opposed to constantly pretending it's not happening?
Well, I think it's really personal, and lots of people do it in different ways, and you will see people fighting it in lots of different ways. So, you know, some people go out and get really pissed all the time, or they start smoking or taking drugs, or they are suddenly staying in and constantly watching television. Like, we all have our own distraction techniques. So if you are with someone, you can see that happening. It's like, unfortunately, I feel like a bit, not to compare it to depression, but the same part of your brain lights up when you're grieving is when you're depressed. So obviously grief is not a mental illness. It has a very clear, you know, timeline and why you feel like that way. But there are similar effects. So equally, you know, if someone's depressed, someone's grieving, is like, you can't rush them. They just have to do what they're going to do. And the other thing I'd say in terms of grief process, the thing we talk about on Griefcast all the time, which I think is really hard for people to accept, is they will never get over it. So I think people like to think, oh, maybe after 3 years they'll be cool. No, they will always be sad about this. That's not to say you won't be happy. You can be happy, you can move on, you can have another partner, but they will always, like we said, you know, it's a crap metaphor, but like, if you lost your leg and you did, you know, you would never be like, you might adapt to not having that leg and you'd be completely fine and happy, but you'd always be like, oh yeah, I did used to have a leg. Like, that's what was there. And I think especially with partner loss, like partner loss or parental loss, or you know, any loss, to be fair, sometimes people are like, oh, there's your 1 year marker, there's your 2 year marker, not sure why she's still talking about it. And I always caveat this with, like, you don't hear parents saying, well, my child's three, I don't know why they still live with me. Like, or you wouldn't turn around to your parents and say, I don't need you to love or care about me anymore. Like, relationships are relationships. Like, if you love people, you love people, you will always miss them. You will always wish that they were part of your life and they're not.
I think partner loss is a particularly interesting one, because obviously when you lose a parent or a family member, you're not going to get another family member, for example.
Well, but people get stepdads.
People get stepdads and stepmoms, they do. But I think the dynamic is slightly different when it comes to relationships, because chances are you will find another romantic partner. Obviously, they will be a different person, and they're not replacing the person you've lost. But do you think there is an added pressure of like, oh, I can't be with someone new yet because I only lost this person however long ago.
Yeah,
I have to wait X amount of time before I move on.
I think all, whether it's sibling, partner, parent, child, like it's always complicated because death is complicated. But yes, particularly, so I interviewed Simon Thomas, who lost his wife about 18 months ago, I think, very suddenly to blood cancer, like extremely suddenly. And he's been very public with his grief, and he came on my show and he talked about it. And I was disgusted by the people who tweeted him and told him that he'd moved on too quickly because he's now in a new relationship. And, you know, not to even justify, it's like, it's in the very early days. I think he's just dating someone.
You see that, though. I think even with celebrities, I'm thinking of like Lea Michele from Glee.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she lost Corey, I can't remember his last name, but the actor who died, who she starred in Glee with. I remember, and then she got a new partner, and people, trolls, they criticise her for moving on too quickly. It's a very strange
phenomenon. I was really shocked at it because the grief class is normally full of lovely people being lovely. So I was really shocked at that. And I think, if you even for a second think, oh, that's a bit quick, one, fuck you. Two, just think how you would feel. And I think it's really, that, you know, the people who aren't moving on, inverted commas, too quick, have had the same thought of like, is this okay? Am I betraying them? You know, all of this stuff. But people can want to be in relationships and can fall in love, and that doesn't betray what they had. You know, it really doesn't. And obviously there's individual circumstances, and I get emails from children who are upset about their pet, like, also, you know, there can be very personal circumstances, but generally it's very hard to know when the right time is. And I think only you know, and if that is 6 months or 25 years, it is up to you. And do not listen to anybody else telling you. Like, grief is such a personal thing, and we all do it completely differently. And the reason it's so personal is the relationship you had with that person is so unique. You know, like, I had a very different relationship to my brother, to my dad, you know, like, and we're siblings in the same family, grew up in the same house, but we related to that man completely differently. And exactly the same with partner, like, your relationship with them would be different to all their other boyfriends and girlfriends that they had along the way. Like, it was unique. It was you plus that person created this. So no one is allowed to tell you how to feel about it, because no one else understands, really.
Do you think from doing Griefcast, obviously you've spoken to so many fascinating people and heard their stories, how do you then go home at the end of the day and move on from that? Because these are incredibly emotional, heartbreaking stories, and I'm, you know, how do you hold it together?
Well, I guess, you know, I joke about in the show, like, we call it the club, and I just always joke, like, I just got to the club early. Like, it was pretty empty when I got here, and they were playing some bad tunes, but I put out some what's-its, and then one by one people come in, and we're all going to get here. So I don't find it as overwhelming as I used to. Obviously, some people's stories are extremely overwhelming because some people have been through unbelievable tragedy. But what it's taught me is it's going to happen to everybody. We're all going to die. We're all going to know someone that dies. And actually, what's weird, what I now think is weird, is the people who don't talk about it, who don't see it, who aren't prepared for it. Like, and then you get people who are so shocked when it happened, like, oh, they died. Like, that is literally the only guarantee of anyone's life, that they will die. Like, it shouldn't really be shocking unless, of course, you know, it's a tragic circumstance. So, yeah, it can be difficult. I watch a lot of, like, Queer Eye and Drag Race to get me through. light entertainment, I think, is what helps me.
Do you think that's also probably helpful for someone who is going through grief to just, you know, disconnect your mind from it all by watching whatever TV shows you like, or...
Yeah, whatever gets you through. Like, you know, obviously the grief cast is, I would recommend, a great resource. There's books. You can really get into the grief. You can talk to other, you know, grievers and get into that community. But also I would, yeah, thoroughly recommend just watching crap. And a lot of people do, and putting on crap music. And I got into soaps when I was 15. I got obsessed. And I started watching, and you know what it's like in England, you could watch stuff from like 5:30 to 9:00 and it's just soaps. And then when I added Emmerdale in, my mum was like, it's gone too far. Yeah. She was like, what is going on? That's when we knew, oh, this might be hitting into actually avoiding the pain as opposed to like comforting. So if you've added Emmerdale, guys, it might have gone too far.
I loved going back to Elizabeth Gilbert, one of her tips, she said that she wakes up every morning since Raya's death and she just dances.
Yeah, she loves a dance, doesn't she? Watch her on Instagram. Yeah. She goes for it. So, not all of us feel so free, but if you do... Yeah, I think dancing can be really, really... You know, like, whatever you need to do. Like, we say on the show, like, if you need to go and get a big stick and walk into a wood and, like, bash the stick up, like, if you need to go and punch a pillow, you need to tear up 1,000 pieces of paper, or if you need to be very quiet, like, you have to get it out. And everyone always tells grievers that, and it can be quite tricky because you're like, well, how do I do it? It's like, whatever your soul is telling you to do, just do it, as long as it doesn't harm you or someone else. Don't be afraid of the answers that your body has. I think sometimes you think, I don't want to scream into my television, it seems really weird, but like, just do it, you'll feel better.
Do you think those 5 stages of grief that people talk about all the time, they were developed in the 60s by like an American...
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Yeah. Are those dated or are they real? Like, how does... Because, I mean, what are they? It starts with denial.
It's denial, bargaining.
Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
So my short answer is it's bullshit.
Yeah.
No offence to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, but I hate it. It's not her fault. The thing you need to know about the 5 stages of grief, it was designed for people who were dying. It was an essay written in the, I think, late 60s, early 70s, and it was designed for people who had a terminal illness. So those were the 5 stages that someone with a terminal illness like cancer would go through. That has no application for someone who is grieving. If someone tells you you have cancer, of course you might negotiate or deny it. Absolutely. And then what happened was, it was a very neat narrative and everyone was like, oh, does this apply to the people dying? Because what we are obsessed with is looking for answers. And what grief offers you is no answers. And I think as humans, that makes us feel very uncomfortable. So if someone has told you you should be in any fucking stage, it is a lie. There is no stage. You go, what is now accepted in grief psychology is that the stages they're talking about are not bullshit. You go through them, but you go around and round and round. Mm-hmm. And there's a really nice one called the ball in the box theory. So like your grief is, your life is this box, and your grief at the beginning is a big, huge, messy ball that fills the whole box. And then as time goes on, your life obviously gets bigger because more things happen, and the box can get bigger and bigger and bigger, but the grief is still there and at any point can bounce up and be like, whoa, it's exactly the same as it was the day it happened, and it happened 21 years ago. But it's a complicated mess that you'll always carry with you. The idea that you're going to reach an acceptance is something that harms people because they feel guilty and they think, oh, why am I not over it? Like, I must be doing it wrong. You are not doing it wrong. That was a theory that was not invented for you. I get really annoyed about it.
No, it's funny because it goes back to the whole thing of just a misunderstanding about what grief is. Mm. And I think if you ask anyone who maybe hasn't been through grief themselves, yeah, the five stages is probably the first thing they will think of when you ask yeah them, how do you get through grief? What's because the process?
Wouldn't we all love to believe
that there's a system?
There's a system.
And there's a stage. And like, it's like, okay, so you start with this and then in 3 months' time, you'll be feeling this. Yeah. And then you'll be feeling that. But obviously, that you can't, obviously, you can't like bookmark your emotions.
If I said to you there was like the five stages of love.
Yeah.
And but after 5 years, you will marry them. You would be like, well, that's not true. Like, obviously, and by year one, you will deny them. But then you will negotiate with them and eventually you'll accept they live in your house. Like, no one would accept that for love. And love is deeply complicated and personal and unique. So, you know what? So is grief. And it just drives me mad. Like, we just would love to believe, people who are not in grief would love to believe, oh, my friend's really grieving. Oh, no, I'll tell them. You've just got to go through these five stages, babes, and then you're going to be fine. It's like, no, you're not. Your friend's going to be messy and snotty and sad for some time. Deal with it.
Are there any stories you've listened to on the podcast that have affected you quite deeply?
And
really struck a chord?
I mean, lots of them have. I would say the most recent one that really got me, I think, obviously, being a mother and particularly the situation that happened, is an author called Jason Green. So he wrote Once More We Saw Stars. And yeah, his two-year-old daughter was killed by a piece of masonry that fell off a building.
It's the most heartbreaking story. I read an excerpt yeah from his book the other day. It's awful.
It's just, well, it's funny, actually, in the interview, I said to him, it's so tragic. And he said, it's not tragic because tragedy has meaning. This is a meaningless act. And that really stuck with me because I was like, how do you process something with, you know, we're talking about narrative and we're talking about except like how? I'd recommend, well, all the grief casts are interesting. That is a particularly heavy one. If you want a lighter one, try Adam Buxton. But Jason spoke so profoundly about what him and his family went through, and they have another child now, Harrison. After it was, her name was Greta, died. And he just spoke so profoundly about what I think is an incredibly extreme case of grief and trauma. And yeah, that really stayed with me. If somebody can cope and walk through that situation and have that strength, I think it's surprisingly inspiring.
It's time for our Lessons in Love segment. So this is where I ask every guest on the podcast to describe one lesson they've learned from their love and relationships experiences. So Cariad, yours is actually nothing to do with grief. On the surface.
On the surface, yeah.
Do you want to describe what your lesson is?
Yes, so don't mistake how you want to be treated with how someone else would want to be treated. And this is a lesson I've learned the hard way, but also I've seen my friends do. So I think it's very common sometimes to, like, if your partner is grieving or sad or depressed, and I hear people, and I, you know, it's mostly my female friends who I talk about relationships with, being like, oh, well, I did this and this for him, and he was still annoyed and he was still sad. And it took me years to understand that, like, just because you would want perhaps someone to keep asking you questions until you break, or to talk to you till 6 in the morning, they might not want that. But I think we model behavior, so we offer behavior which is like, well, I would like it if this happened. And I think it takes a lot of maturity and a letting go of your own ego to look at someone and go, what do they need that might not be what I want to do? So your way of helping someone might be really, you might be really good at talking and you might really want to like talk it out. And that partner might be like, I'm not ready to talk. I need to be quiet. And that might be really hard for you, speaking from experience. So especially if someone's grieving, I think sometimes you can like, well, when I was grieving, this is the other point that happens sometimes when you're king of the grief club, you think, well, I know how everybody feels. And you don't. You know how you feel. So you might have thought, well, when I was sad about my grandpa, I did this and I wanted this. So I'm going to do that to people. But I think sometimes it's like knowing your audience and being like, well, actually that person is someone who likes to be quiet, or they like to, or they do like to talk about it, or they like to be distracted. And I think sometimes we get obsessed with doing things for people that we want them to do back and then getting frustrated that they don't do them because they don't know that what you're doing is going, you know, when I bought you flowers and talked to you all night, that's actually what I wanted you to do. And that's why I did it for you because I thought you'd learn. I thought you'd see it and go, oh, this is fun. But that's not how
people
work.
Sometimes you have to just really like, really paint it out and be like, this is what I need from you.
Yeah.
And this is what, you know, this is what I will give to you in return. Do you think it's important in a relationship to sort of establish your needs as such early on? I think, you know, maybe if you get into an argument, for example, it can be helpful to know already, well, this, you know, when this person argues with me, I know that they need space, for example.
Yeah,
whereas I might prefer to sort it out right away.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's probably quite a common example, isn't it?
Yeah, and I definitely have that with my husband. I'm like, let's sort it out. Let's keep going till 3 a.m. We've screamed at each other. He's like, I'd like to go to bed and think about it.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I'm like, I need space. I need time to think about this. I need, don't talk to me for a few hours and then I will come back with a clear mind.
Yeah, see, I'm the hothead. Let's just scream it out and then it's sorted. So, and I'm married to someone who is very much of the school of, I would like it to go away for a bit.
So how do you deal with that?
Yes, yeah, so I think it's real compromise. Yeah. So I think it's really important. I don't think you should smother your own needs and be like, oh, I'll only do what they want. But I think definitely when he was grieving, because he's lost both his parents, I would try and like do it the way I thought, like let's scream it out, let's talk, let's cry. And he was like, I think I just need to be left alone. And I was like, no, that's not how you do it. So I think it's really important that, yeah, you don't, your own needs are expressed, but you have to acknowledge that not everyone is going to do the same as you. So equally, when you need space, you have to accept that might be hard for someone who is not good with space, who 2 hours later can't remember what they were upset about. So they need to say it now. So I think the way we deal with it is like, I will often say it all in the heat of the moment. He will go away and then he'll come back and then I will then scream again. But it's like, if I have to be allowed to express myself, otherwise, like, I'm terrible 2 hours later. I find that really upsetting. So I'm like, I'm done. I forgot about it. Moved on. So, yeah, you have to give space for both needs and accept that that might mean you being uncomfortable. So if you were just like, I need space, it's like, no, you're going to have to sit here for half an hour and get shouted at so that you can have half an hour space. It's tip-tap.
That's all we have time for this week on Millennial Love. Follow Independent Lifestyle on social media to keep up to date with what's coming up on the show. And if you're a new listener, remember to subscribe to this series on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen. Also, leave us a rating and comment with your thoughts on our conversation today. Until next time, thanks a lot for listening. Goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.